Hey everyone, welcome back to the Performance Marketing Minds podcast, brought to you by Outbrain Direct Response. I'm your host, Joe Adana, and today I'm joined by Anthony Chiarovallo, CEO of Vallo Media. I've known this guy for over 9 years, and he was actually one of my first clients ever at Outbrain. We talk about how he started his career in sales, launched his own agency during the pandemic, and why brand building mixed with performance marketing is a true game changer. You'll want to stick around for the real examples on how retargeting and data-driven strategies have shaped his success because they're super interesting. He's also got a book coming out called Brand Powered Media, so if you want more from him when this is all over, make sure to keep your eyes out for it. All right, let's get into my conversation with Anthony Chiarovallo. I'm really pumped to talk to you because I feel like we have similar stories in a way. Like, we probably started working together way back in 2016, 2017, when you were probably at Burson doing a lot of comms and PR and stuff like that. And I was a young whippersnapper in sales and account management working in that field too. And then over the years, we kind of both gravitated into the performance marketing agency world. So,
yeah.
Why? How did that go and how's that been?
Honestly, it's been great, right? I think I started my career in sales, you know, probably a similar track as you, sales and content marketing. And, you know, it was just a natural evolution, right? And so when I was hired by, even before Burson, I was working for Ketchum, actually. I don't know if we worked together back then, but, you know, that was another big PR firm, but they essentially hired me to do paid media. So I've always been doing paid media within PR agencies. You know, before that I was a marketing director. So I had a background in just, you know, general marketing. Before that I worked at a digital agency where, you know, they would run paid search and it was very like lead gen focused. So I had a little bit of a background, you know, in performance marketing prior to joining some of the big holdcos. And so, you know, that sort of experience brought a pretty unique perspective within a PR agency, right? Because they're not typically associated with performance marketing. And certainly the paid media that we did within PR is different than like the performance marketing that like a lead gen agency or an e-com agency would do, right? It's more about brand awareness and, you know, content amplification, that sort of thing. And so when I was working for some of those big holding companies, it became a unique opportunity to say, well, hey, here's some of the principles of performance marketing that we can, you know, bring to bear on some of these bigger PR and comms projects.
Yeah, I think that's might have been subconsciously why I gravitated to you or even my old manager, Steve Kieran. I don't know. When we talk about you, we always talk about how much we liked working with you, probably because you brought some of that scrappy, like, traditional performance marketing attitude towards these PR agencies where we were mostly talking to people that didn't really understand paid media. We needed to convince them to run paid media and why it's so important for all the great earned media they were getting or all the promotion they were working on. And basically, I remember one of the big pitches was like, you guys are creating all of these stories and doing all of this work on the back end to do it. You should own the full piece of it and you shouldn't run the paid media behind it and you should really stick your neck out there and do it. So that's probably one of the reasons. Maybe subconsciously we knew that you were a little bit more advanced in that way.
Yeah. And honestly, that's why the PR agencies hired me. They're like, we need a guy like you that understands this because, you know, that was not their world, you know? And even to this day, actually, a lot of my clients are other PR agencies. So I'm consulting with not only brands, but with other agencies, many of them being PR or creative shops. And I just love working with them because they're out there telling these great stories. And you know, and they're getting a lot of good earned media. They're getting a lot of reach and distribution, but that's only kind of like half the puzzle, right? And so it's like paid comes in to help capture a lot of that demand, whether it's building retargeting campaigns on the website. So that way, when all this PR is hitting, you know, we're having an effective way to re-engage people, whether it's, you know, amplifying that, whether it's running paid search to complement what they're doing on the earned side. And so, you know, it's just been a really, I think, unique sort of link between the two. And, you know, and we're doing regular performance stuff too. Like we're doing, you know, e-com campaigns, we're doing paid search, paid social, all that good stuff. But it's still been just kind of part of my DNA, you know, coming from that PR world.
Yeah. And what made you actually jump and leave? Because as anybody that's been in the marketing world for 10 plus years, everyone gets the ish, like, man, I could be doing this myself. All these people are making so much money. Like, I understand things. I could definitely do this. So 2020, interesting time to go do it right during COVID. You decided to build your own shop. And I'm interested, like, what made you, I don't know, how confident were you going into it? And then also throughout the whole piece of it now, 5 years later, just understanding how much it's evolved, you know, from how clients trust you, the reputation that you've built, getting referrals through the whole industry. And there's so much to it of owning your own business, but I'm just curious.
Yeah. So what's that old saying? Necessity is the mother of invention, right? So COVID hit, BCW, Kona Wolf, Burson went through like three mergers and my position was eliminated. So I was kind of in the position where, okay, I could go back to corporate, get a job. And I had some pretty good offers lined up actually shortly after that time. But I've always wanted to do my own thing. I always sort of saw myself as an entrepreneur. I loved just doing things my own way without red tape or bureaucracy or having to do it this certain way because that's how it's done and this, you know, sort of process within a big agency. And I already had a client on the side, so I was doing some consulting on, you know, I was like moonlighting with a few brands. A buddy of mine started a company here in New Jersey called Pliables. They had grown to like 30 locations selling these acai bowls. The brand is a phenom, right? And so at the time they needed marketing help. And I kind of, you know, jumped on board as a consultant. So I had a nice little side hustle going and I said, you know what, this is going to be my runway. I had like 5 weeks of severance. You know, at the time I was like, I'm going to just, you know, see if I can get this thing off the ground on my own. As a marketing consultant, right? And so that's typically how it starts, right? You hear a lot of stories of big agencies. They started out as a freelancer. They were consulting with other agencies, consulting with other brands. And it was really right in the middle of 2020 where so much was shifting, right? You had consumer behavior, media consumption, even what the brands were prioritizing at the time. And so I found myself, you know, coaching them through COVID. Should we keep the stores open? Should we shut them down? How do we, you know, communicate with our customers? What are we doing as a business, right? So they started seeing me more as a strategic business partner. And so it was at that time that I really saw an opening for an agency that could cut through the noise and focus, you know, not just on performance, but, you know, tying what we were doing on the media marketing side to those real tangible business outcomes. And so the mission really started as a way to help brands grow through smarter paid media. But as performance sort of evolved, now we're, you know, AI, automation, privacy changes, we've really expanded to help brands scale profitably in this sort of very complex and fast-changing like media environment. So we're not just buying ads anymore. We're really focused on building systems that will help our clients like grow with agility, with precision and accountability. And that's been our key differentiator. We find a lot of other agencies in the space, like paid media agencies specifically, just kind of set it and forget it. And there's not a lot of optimizations being made. They're very hands-off. It's kind of like, all right, you know, we're letting these campaigns run. We're letting the algorithms do their thing and that's it. And we've audited hundreds of client ad accounts that are being run by other agencies. And it's pretty scary how prevalent it is in the industry in terms of just a lack of oversight on some of these campaigns that are spending, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And it's crazy how much is being wasted. We just audited a client the other day and their PMax campaigns on Google Ads, we're generating these really high ROAS numbers. And we're like, that's pretty incredible, but something seems off. It turns out 80% were being generated from branded searches. So like, okay, well that's traffic that could have been free. And you're spending, you know, $50,000, $60,000 on these ads that you could have converted these, you know, customers for free. So it's those kinds of things that really keep me motivated and inspired me to start Volo Media because we just see so much waste out there. And it's just, you know, it's something that I've sort of made it my mission to uncover and fix for clients.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, that's kind of similar to, so when I've been with Outbrain and Teads for 10 years in January, and I moved out to the West Coast to help call on a lot of the big holding agencies, big brands, and try and drum up that business on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. And I just kept finding myself in these meetings and these lunch and learns and taking people out to drinks. But it was really like 22 to 28 year olds that were kind of just hanging out, setting and forgetting it, doing their thing. And you would close Netflix for $50,000 and it would be awesome. You would put the logo on the slides internally in a meeting, but then they don't talk to us for two more years. And right. that could be for a lot of different reasons, but I just kept gravitating more towards this performance world. And one of the coolest parts about being in the space for a decent amount of time now is starting to see the transition into more independent, smaller, performance-focused consulting agencies, because I saw the same things. And I remember going to a lot of the conferences and even, you know, some of the best ones, like the Media Post and DigiDays, and just being confused. I always just found myself there talking to people and being like, man, what? I just can't wrap my head around how to connect with this person. And then all of a sudden in the performance marketing world, when people are doing things more for a reason, and a lot of times it's their own money, or at least the people, the big companies are operating like it's their own money, you know, it starts to become a little bit different of a conversation, which I've definitely always enjoyed.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I love the space as well. You know, and when we're talking about performance, there's a lot of scrutiny and, you know, and what these dollars are being spent on, what are we getting out of it, sort of thing, right? So that's always something that we try and strike a balance between that and brand building.
So talk to me about this. Let me get inside your mind for a little bit. And I know I've read an article before from you about kind of the connection between brand building and performance tactics. And I think a lot of people listening to this podcast are a lot of people from the almost digital first, strictly performance brand side of things, where they own this company. They really just want to make sales or drive leads or something like that. But there are also a lot of offer owners and people that either run the media directly, allow affiliates to run their traffic for them, and they don't touch it so much, but they provide the creative. So I'm really interested in your view, how that integration looks now in 2025 between those two things, about how people at large companies and small companies are trying to balance this brand identity and brand story while also trying to hit double, triple digit growths through paid media.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great topic and it's something I feel pretty strongly about. Actually, I wrote a book about it called Brand Powered Media, about the integration between brand and performance marketing, that's coming out later this year. And so, you know, it's something that I feel there was always this question. It's like, all right, you're either doing transactional paid media and it's driving, you know, results and sales, or you're building a brand and it's not really tangible with what this is actually getting us. And so the tension has always been branding feels long-term and performance felt short-term. But the reality is the best performing campaigns, they now do both. And there's been a ton of studies that came out at Adweek last year about the brands that do both and do them well. In other words, not in silos, they actually, you know, connect brand and performance, are absolutely crushing it compared to brands that are either doing too much of one, for example, too much performance and not enough brand, or vice versa, too much brand and not performance. And in reality, the best performing campaigns are the ones that bridge the gap between both great, you know, brand initiatives, ones that are powered by great creative and great brand strategy, with really well structured, you know, paid media and really well-structured performance marketing. So if you're running paid campaigns and you have really weak creative, you're just pouring fuel on a bad fire, right? But if you marry the strong branding with precise targeting and testing, that's where you'll get those outsized results. And so, you know, we've seen it firsthand when one client refreshed their creative, when they invested in brand, that became like almost like a tailwind for the performance marketing. And so other clients that just overinvested in the lower funnel, they were spending $80 million a year on paid search. We had one client and very little upper funnel. And they were getting hammered. Their cost per clicks were going up. Their cost per acquisition was going up. They were losing market share to their competitors. And they're like, why is this happening? Why is this happening? It's like, well, you've completely ignored your brand. You've just dumped everything you had into these lower funnel performance campaigns. And yeah, it worked for a while. Like, you know, during COVID, they could do no wrong. They were making, you know, I don't know, a 3-to-1 ROAS or something. And but eventually that breaks down, right? And so without that long-term investment in the brand, you're just another commodity to customers, right? And it doesn't, and they're not really connecting the dots between what you're you know, offering and what you, who you are as a brand and what that means for them in terms of, you know, what is that value proposition? And you're just competing towards the lowest common denominator. And so what's happening is all of their costs were going up. And so it's really not about brand or performance. It's really about both. And all the data is really starting to show this. So a really exciting time because brands are starting to kind of wake up to this fact. And what we're seeing is that the brands that are most successful are the ones that have really tightly integrated their teams, their brand team and their performance team, like lockstep. One is fueling the other and vice versa, as opposed to some of the brands that are still siloed or that are still overinvested in, you know, in the lower funnel is what we see mostly, because brands are like, look, we have to make this type of return. We gotta, you know, show this much ROI from our ads. And so they almost get addicted to performance, but unfortunately it is long-term detrimental.
Yeah. Super interesting. And I think about, I have a lot of thoughts, but I'm thinking about the brands that are maybe building for an acquisition and they know they're eventually just trying to get scooped up by somebody. And that's one category. And then there's this other category that I'm thinking about in my head, kind of that I touched on earlier, which is these people that own really great products, but they're not running the marketing themselves and they're relying on affiliates through an affiliate network or people they know to run it for them. And I feel like on both ends, I'm just thinking about what I would do if I was one of those offer owners that was working with affiliates and just thinking about how to have roundtables about the brand side of things so that the affiliate or person running the media agency, whoever, actually can understand and know some of these things and maybe even incentivize them to go with this image or this headline or this new creative or something like that. Because I think you're right. A lot of people do just try and get the cheapest click at the most efficient click. And eventually they're wondering why it's not working anymore. And there's this creative attrition that just kind of wipes them out. And people are always scrambling to figure out what to do. And there's all these tools and stuff like that now, but I don't know. It's just an interesting thought in my head about how the industry evolves through and stays connected, like you said, through these teams, through brand and performance, and eventually lifts the long tail of performance in the end anyway, even if you think that it's all about the numbers and purchases and leads and all this stuff, to where it eventually just kind of lifts that ship up too, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like the rising tide lifts all boats, right? I feel a lot of brands are tempted to just overinvest in the lower funnel because it shows that short-term ROI. And a great industry case study is look what Nike did a few years ago. They went, you know, super hard into the lower funnel. They're like, we just want to go direct to consumer. And they totally pivoted away from what made them so successful in the first place, which was building that brand and that Nike ethos that made them so successful. And I don't know if you've probably seen, but you know, just last year, they totally went back now. They're like, that was a totally failed experiment. The stock, I think, tanked. Their sales went down because they were so focused on the lower funnel and it absolutely just crushed their business. And so they've done a complete 180 back to saying, all right, let's get back to who we are. So it's almost like what's old is new again, right? Because I feel like advertising before, you know, Google Ads and performance, that's what it was. It was like TV campaigns, big splashy initiatives, like PR, that sort of thing. And so we're kind of just going full circle now back to like what made advertising great in the first place, what made it work. And it was about, you know, building that brand, keeping it top of mind. And now with all the tools that we have available to us from, you know, performance and analytics and attribution and all of these things, you know, marketers became almost like, you know, too focused on those things. And so now that we've got all the data coming out that supports this unified approach, I think we're seeing a lot of brands start to make that pivot. And the results are following.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny, it kind of speaks to exactly that. I had a friend in the industry from San Diego that worked for HP's affiliate team, or actually, yeah, he worked for their affiliate team, was running some paid media himself. And then he went to Nike and he's still at Nike. And he's, he basically runs all of like their channel partnerships and their affiliate stuff. And he works with news publishers to get the listing on the publisher and like reviews or featured articles and stuff like that. And he's really focused on the performance side of things. But I know that he has calls with them all the time and does these roundtables with, you know, the editors and people that really matter to make sure the brand story is still effective throughout the whole process. And it's not just some holiday listicle of the top 10 sneakers you need to get for your girlfriend or something like that. So
yeah,
I totally see it. Cool.
Nice.
So talk to me about all the different platforms for performance and branding together, because I'm in a native advertising network, but there's influencers, programmatic, social. How do you balance when you're consulting for a brand and they get the pitch? They totally understand it. They're like, wow, Anthony, this makes so much sense. How did I not meet you before? But now tell me how to actually do it. Are there certain percentage buckets that you place on all of these things, or is one better for the other, or how do you go about doing that?
Yeah, I will say there are some general, you know, breakdowns that we will follow, right? And so typically search and social, those are going to be your most efficient channels. Search, obviously, because it's a higher intent, right? People are looking for a specific brand or looking for a specific type of product or service. So you've got, you know, an interested user. And then we've got social on the other side, which is more about discovery. And so we'll typically weight a client's paid media budget. You know, obviously every client's different. B2B is different than B2C, which is different than e-commerce, which is different than technology, healthcare, whatever it may be. But for the most part, you know, for an engagement, we're typically looking at, you know, those two channels. And social is different for every brand. Some brands are more successful on LinkedIn, given their audience. Others are more successful on Meta, you know, Facebook and Instagram. And then other brands, you know, TikTok is the primary channel for them. But for the most part, those will be where we start. And so once a client has sort of maxed out the performance that they can achieve on those channels, then we'll start to introduce other channels like programmatic. And we do a lot of video, of course, so YouTube is included in there. You know, programmatic video, we do display, rich media, native, absolutely. And when we're looking at a client's goals, we'll typically work backwards to say, all right, well, what's the business outcome that we want to achieve? What are some media KPIs that are important to us? And this is where I think a lot of agencies get it wrong, because they're looking exclusively at what is that primary KPI. Let's just use a simple example, like an online sale or even just a lead being captured on their website. Okay, well, that's our objective, right? But we have to understand that the majority of people that see your ad or come to your website or click on one of your pieces of sponsored content, you know, they're not going to convert on that first visit. They're not going to come to your website on that very first touch point and buy a product. It's just not going to happen. In fact, the majority won't. So we need another way to qualify those users. And that's where behavioral conversions come into play, right? And so when we're looking at these different channels, we're looking at how we allocate budget. The most important thing is, like, do we have the right tracking in place so that we can understand a qualified user, again, with the assumption that not everyone's going to convert on that first time, we need another way to qualify that user. So we could do that through like a behavioral conversion. So is this person spending more than 30 seconds on the website? Are they visiting multiple pages? Yes, they didn't convert, but at least we know they're interested, as opposed to someone who clicks on an ad and then bounces immediately upon landing on your site. And so when we're looking at the breakdown, whatever we start with in an engagement for a particular client or initiative, it's going to change after a month, 2 months, 3 months, because again, once we have these data signals and we can analyze what the traffic is doing, that media mix shifts. So we might have initially had like 40% in, you know, paid search, 30% in paid social, and then the rest went to programmatic, native, and video. But after the first 2 months of running the ads, we might find, you know what, actually the social ads are performing way better. And we're not only seeing better performance within the platforms, but we're actually seeing that the users that are coming to the site are more qualified. And yes, maybe they're not converting, but what we're seeing is a correlation. So we're running these social ads, and now we're seeing a spike in organic, you know, people coming to the site from branded searches. So our social ads, even though we can't measure that exactly, the social ads themselves are actually having an impact on people looking for your brand in search. And right, and so this is the types of conversations that we have with clients because it allows us to be more strategic with how we allocate their budget. So even though we're not seeing the direct performance coming from social, if we're looking at last click or if we're looking at attribution in terms of, hey, this person come to our website from a social ad, did they buy, yes or no? That's very black and white. It's a very limited picture of performance. And so we need to look at correlations between, hey, we're running these social ads and we're getting really good engagement. And yes, we're getting click-throughs. People aren't buying, but we're seeing this correlation over here in this huge spike in branded traffic. And that's happening because when we turned these social ads off, we saw that go down. So you have to be able to think, and this is where I think, you know, a human strategist is really valuable as opposed to just letting AI run your ads for you, as much as the platforms, you know, think that that's something that everyone should be doing. I feel like having that level of strategic insight and knowing what to look for, knowing what to optimize for, and actually setting up these qualified data signals so that you're feeding the algorithms good data. Because a lot of times when we audit a client's campaign, where like everything that you're feeding this algorithm is actually amplifying your bad results because you're feeding it bad data. You're saying, oh, we got all these clicks and it cost us, you know, 10 cents or 20 cents. That's great. We say, yeah, but actually, you know, 90% of them were spam or bots and they're not really, yeah. And these are very sophisticated brands. These are brands that are spending, you know, potentially millions of dollars on digital ads every year, but missing a lot of these foundational things. So when we think about a media mix, when we think about what does that breakdown of spend look like, again, we start with a few hypotheses. We'll typically do a data immersion and understand, okay, where are you seeing traffic? Where are your conversion points? Where are some of these, you know, issues popping up where we're seeing user drop off? And then we'll start with an allocation and a breakdown, and then we'll adjust. And I think we just really emphasize the importance of kind of letting the data lead us and where, you know, where is the data telling us to reallocate or optimize spend. And so that's been the approach that's worked really well for a lot of the clients we work with.
Super cool. I love that explanation. And it's similar to what we talk to our clients about. It's not always about the most lower funnel action, right? Because mm-hmm. one of the mindset shifts that we've had and tried to ingrain our clients too is all of these upper funnel conversion actions, which really aren't a conversion, but it is something like 30 seconds time on site. Maybe they click something. So we at least know where the qualified users are coming from. And somebody like us, who's a big native network and has CNN and Fox News, and within there you have sports, business, entertainment, politics. Like there's mm-hmm. so many sections in there too that you really need to understand, okay, where's my core audience coming from and how can I market to them in a better way? And to your point, marrying brand and performance on that social ad, it tells the whole story through the whole thing. And then once they get retargeted, which I want to talk about too, mm-hmm. it all comes together, or maybe they do a branded search and they get there and stuff. But one of the things that I've said for years is I wish more people in my world, this affiliate direct response marketing world, it's all last click, you know? And there's very few people, and I'm talking hundreds of millions of dollars a year just being spent, all last click, mm-hmm. don't care about anything else. And for somebody that's spending $5 million a month on paid media and not running any type of retargeting to some advanced user set, it's mind-blowing to me. And I've talked about this and I've said it to people, but it's so crazy how rare it is that people actually pick up on it. Like I think a lot of the larger brands know, and they've historically run through Criteo and they've done all kinds of different things, but the more, you know, nimble, agile affiliate marketer, paid media mercenary agency, whatever you want to call them, it's telling that story's hard, and then getting them to commit to it is harder. But I don't know. What are your thoughts on that? I assume you have to do a lot of it, especially talking through brand and performance. The retargeting must be a decent chunk of what you guys are doing and the strategy behind it, right?
Oh, yeah, 100%. And to your point, we've, again, audited so many clients and so many brands that don't even have retargeting set up properly, or they think they have it set up, and it's reaching non-retargeting audiences. So It's mind-blowing that this is still an issue, because I feel like retargeting has been around forever, and it's such low-hanging fruit in terms of, hey, like we're reaching people that are already interested, you're already paying to send them to your site, the majority of which aren't converting, so of course you should be retargeting them and bringing them back and serving them ads to keep the brand top of mind, right? And when we talk about retargeting, yes, we retarget website visitors. Very, very important. Like, again, low-hanging fruit, very foundational. But we also do, you know, other forms of retargeting. So we'll do retargeting based off a client's CRM list. So we'll take, you know, their top 10,000, 100,000 customers, and we'll retarget them. We'll also retarget ad engagers. And so something that we do across all the ads platforms is people that are engaging with our ads, they're now put into a separate retargeting audience, and we can serve them different messages and different products. Another form of retargeting is DCO, so dynamic creative optimization. This is people that come to your website, place a specific product in their cart, and then leave. Now we have the ability to serve them an ad with that specific product. And I'm sure as consumers, we see these ads all the time, right? But you would be surprised how many brands just aren't doing it. And it works. It works really, really well. We're running upper funnel for a huge industrial supply company, and DCO is a major part of it. And we're driving tons and tons of direct sales through this capability. And it's just another form of retargeting. So when clients, and part of what I do is take a very educational approach. Like, I really am passionate about educating clients, about educating the agency partners that we work with. And then just the topic of retargeting always comes up because it's almost never being done right, at least with the brands that we work with. Again, they're coming to us because they need paid media help, obviously. But retargeting is just so important because you need a way to bring those users back. So first, like we were talking about before, we're sending users to the site. We're qualifying them based on engagement metrics, right? Because not every single one's going to convert. And then now we're retargeting those qualified users. And so now we've sort of created this mini marketing funnel, and it functions as this flywheel effect because we're qualifying users, we're sending the quality signals back to the algorithm, we're bringing them back through retargeting, we're reaching the ad engagers, we're reaching the website visitors, you know, and we're setting frequency caps and things. You don't want to, you know, totally bludgeon people with your brand. So it's important to have the right balance, the right mix. And we're just seeing really fantastic, you know, results with that. And I will say just, you know, in terms of retargeting, it's not like a huge cost, you know. I mean, the retargeting budgets are sometimes just a few $1,000s. Obviously, it depends on the size of the brand. We work with a lot of, you know, startup companies with not huge budgets. And so, you know, there is just opportunity to really set this up properly. And I will, you know, give a piece of advice here is, you know, go into your Google Ads account and check and make sure that your retargeting audiences are real retargeting audiences, because a lot of times what we find is that audience expansion has been enabled and you're reaching people that are not really a what I would consider a true retargeting audience. And so that's really important, is to actually make sure you have this set up properly.
Good tip. And for us in the marketing world, it is apparent, or I think people are getting better, but years ago you would buy the flight on American Airlines and you would get retargeted with display ads and banners and cubes. Mm-hmm. And are you still interested in going to San Diego or whatever? Now it's a little bit better than that, but to your point, there's steps to it. Like, yes, you can create the retargeting audience for your entire website, but how are you going to do it effectively through all of this dynamic, mm-hmm. creative, and all that different things, which is 1,000%. And like the cool thing from our end too, and I know other networks do it as well, but to retarget, they don't even have to be coming from our clickers. So most of the time, Outbrain and Native in general, it's not the biggest piece of the pie for marketing. They are running more search, social, YouTube, all these types of different things. But all of a sudden, you can start to build the audience from wherever they come from and set up those creative rules and then target them on our platform based on specific things. So mm-hmm. we've had people that create, kind of like you said, that are the smart ones, that they know where people are coming from. They know they came from this social engagement, so they're going to hit them with some type of same social looking creative or secondary story. We used to call it story sequencing back in the day. It used to be our pitch, where we could bring people through three or four different content journeys, and that it would eventually lead to some lower funnel action. And it worked really well. The scale wasn't huge, but the whole story behind it, very cool. So
yeah, no, absolutely. And we're doing a lot of the same thing now. It's about telling a story and building a narrative, right? And doing that in a strategic sequence so that users are maybe seeing a video that's kind of educating them about who the brand is. It's very top of funnel, right? And then serving them additional ads as they sort of move down, educating them maybe about product features, product benefits, maybe throwing in some UGC content, third-party testimonial things, and then building that sort of user journey is really important for building those warm audiences.
I love it. This has been awesome. But I want to hear what's next for you. What's this book about? Because I had no clue that was a thing, and I'm very excited for you. But let me hear this book pitch and what's going on in this.
Yeah, no, 100%. So again, the book's called Brand Powered Media. It is literally about the integration of brand with performance marketing and how this is kind of the future that we all need to get behind as marketers. And we're going to have just a lot of great case studies, not just, personal case studies from clients that we've worked with, but industry-wide case studies. So looking at that Nike example, looking at other really prevalent examples in the industry, and just giving practical tips. It's really packed with value, right? Because like I was talking about earlier, I'm very passionate about educating people about marketing and what's working. And I have a whole chapter on AI and the tools and kind of, what's something that can be, done within the AI world right now, and how brands can start experimenting and using it more effectively. And for me, I just wanted it to be that sort of handbook that, I wish I had as a marketing director or as a CMO or as a marketing coordinator or a digital media buyer. And got a lot of great, people that I've interviewed as well that will be featured in the book, some colleagues, some brand leaders. And, it's going to come out later this year. It's actually almost done. I'm just going through some final edits and some final adjustments. If any of your listeners would like to reserve a copy, you can go to brandpoweredmedia.com. You just put your name in for free and you'll get an update and a bunch of bonuses when you sort of sign up to receive a notification about when the book comes out. But I'm really excited about it. I think it sort of fills this hole in the marketplace where this wasn't really being talked about from a broad perspective in terms of what are we actually seeing working right now when we're looking at the brands that are being very successful in terms of bridging the gap between brand and performance. And so that's sort of what I set out to do. I was like, there's no book about this, so I'm going to write one.
Very cool. I love it. And this whole interview has been basically brand performance because you just dropped a bunch of knowledge on us and then gave us your lead gen for the book. So this is great.
Exactly. And that's how it works.
I know. See, if you took anything from it, it's easy. Well, cool, man. Thank you for hopping on. I really appreciate it. It was great catching up with you.
Of course. Likewise. Thanks for having me.
All right, brother. See you.